Welcome to Today on Broadway for Tuesday, May 3rd, 2016. I'm Broadway World's Matt Timonini, and happy Tony nomination Tuesday, James.
It's the most wonderful time. I'm James Marino from Broadway Stars.
Follow us throughout all of the awards and Tony season at Broadway Radio on Facebook and Twitter. It's going to be a whole lot of fun, so I hope you guys are ready.
Okay, Matt, there was a big event this morning, wasn't there?
There was. Our good friend Andrew Rannells, who was on Patty Murin's inaugural episode of her podcast, and his Book of Mormon co-star, Nikki M. James, announced the Tony Award nominations, and it was not exactly a shock in a lot of these categories, but it was always exciting to see those things happen.
Okay, the equivalent of the TLDR. Matt, give our listeners the rundown.
All right. In the nominations for Best Play, we had Eclipsed, The Father, The Humans, and King Charles III. For Best Musical, we had Bright Star, Hamilton, School of Rock, Shuffle Along, and Waitress. For Best Revival of a Play, we had The Crucible, A View from the Bridge, Blackbird, Long Day's Journey into Night, and Noises Off. Best Revival of a Musical, The Color Purple, Fiddler on the Roof, She Loves Me, and Spring Awakening.
Okay, so there's that. We'll have a link to all the nominations on Broadway Radio. We're going to talk about it for a little right now.
A shocker to no one, Hamilton led the way with a record-breaking 16 nominations. That beats the previous record, which was shared by the producers and Billy Elliot with 15. Now, put that in perspective. A new musical is only eligible in 13 categories. So that means they doubled up on a lot of those acting categories, specifically in the best performance by an actor in a leading role in a musical where you've got both Lin-Manuel Miranda and Leslie Odom Jr. And then you also have it in the best performance by an actor in a featured role in a musical with Jonathan Groff, David Diggs, and Joshua Jackson. And then you've also throw in Renee Elise Goldsberry in the featured actress in a musical. You've got Philippa Sue in the lead actress in a musical category. And most of that principal cast was nominated. And then you throw in a nomination in every single other category. And that's how you get to 16.
It goes to 11. Hamilton, it goes to 11. So did the Tony Awards nominate Best Book of a Musical?
They did. They did. Lynn was nominated in that one. Unlike our friends over at the drama desks, they did.
All right. So, what was surprising here? I will let you start. What's surprising to you?
Well, what's surprising to me is some of the shows that didn't get a whole lot of love. Primarily, there was very little love for American Psycho. It only got two nominations, and those were in the scenic design of a musical and lighting design of a musical. We talked on this show, and I know you mentioned it, both Peter and Michael loved it when they reviewed it on This Week on Broadway, but they both said that this is a show that is not for everybody. So I can understand why it didn't get some, but I think the risk-taking that they did in that show apparently was not appreciated by the nominators. I guess that might go towards the old cliches about who is doing the Tony nominating and voting. But I'm kind of disappointed about that because I like to see risks, as I mentioned before, I like to see risks rewarded on Broadway.
So Shuffle Along has 10 nominations.
It does. And that's kind of surprising too, because despite the incredible cast, the show got a lot of nominations, but only two in the acting categories. And they weren't for the names you would have expected. The acting nominations for Shuffle Along went to Brandon Victor Dixon in the featured actor in a musical and Adrienne Warren in featured actress. So no Audra McDonald, so she's not going for yet another Tony. You've got no Brian Stokes Mitchell, although we'll talk about him in a second. He is going to get a Tony, but not in the competitive category. No Billy Porter, Joshua Henry, all those folks that were the big above the title names, they didn't really get anything.
Yeah, it's very, very shocking. I'm very worried about how CBS will deal with Shuffle Along if they do win anything. How do they fit all the whole name on the chyron?
Well, as you noticed in the nominations, they said it the first time,
yes,
and then every time after they just went with Shuffle Along, which I think is probably a good way to do it. But Shuffle Along, dot dot dot. You know, that'll work.
All right. Any other shocks here? She Loves Me got 8 nominations. Long Day's Journey and Tonight got 7. Eclipse got 6. The Humans got 6.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if there's any huge shocks. I did like some of them. I was glad to see that Randy Skinner's choreography was nominated for Dames at Sea, because that was a show that closed, you know, very quickly, but had a lot of really good choreography in it. People loved the tap dancing, so that was cool to see. And I loved the reaction when Nicky M. James announced that Michael Arden had been nominated for Best Director of a Musical, because they are friends, and to see her kind of really excited that she was announcing his nomination for the Spring Awakening revival was very cool. I also was interested that the Best Actor in a Musical category saw a couple names that we hadn't seen very much in some of the other awards that they were eligible for. We saw both Alex Brightman for School of Rock and Zachary Levi for She Loves Me, two actors who are doing really good work in shows that probably aren't they aren't the serious fare that some of these other ones are, like Hamilton and Shuffle Along, but they are doing really good, fairly comedic work. And I know Alex Brightman is his performance is kind of getting a lot of accolades for how hard he's working, so it's good to see him rewarded with a Tony nomination. And I think Zachary Levi, who is a great TV star, now in his second Broadway show, and getting some accolades and hopefully keeping him around on the boards for a long time.
So our friend and colleague Peter Felicia from Broadway Radio has been talking about King Charles III, and you know, King Charles III closed in January,
yeah,
and it was remembered here to the tune of 5 nominations. And I thought that was wonderful. Peter's a very big proponent of this show, and Tim Pigott Smith and others, Richard Goulding, got nominations, as well as Tom Scott from Best Costume Design, but Rupert Gold for Best Direction of a Play. So we'll have to see how these things play out in the big campaigns for the campaigns of the nominees with the players.
Well, it's not just King Charles III. Also with 5 nominations are A View from the Bridge and Noises Off. So those are shows that closed back in January as well. So, and those are some of the biggest, you know, the only shows that had more nominations were in terms of plays were Long Day's Journey, Eclipsed, and The Humans. So then you've got this this group of 5 nominations with A View from the Bridge, King Charles III, and Noises Off, 3 of which, you know, were already closed. So we're hopefully that doesn't negatively impact their potential to win, but it is interesting that they were remembered, which is not always the case.
And the shows that we had talked about earlier that are struggling, the Blackbirds, ugh, the Disaster, Tuck Everlasting, they got nominations here, but you know, we'll have to see how this affects them.
Yeah, Disaster and Tuck Everlasting both only pulled down 1 nomination apiece. Blackbird, which is a revival, so it's not eligible for as many things, did get a Best Revival nomination and nominations for both of its big name actors, Jeff Daniels and Michelle Williams. So that one did about as well as you probably could have imagined. But The Father only getting 2, Disaster, Tuck Everlasting only getting 1. The one that really kind of surprised me is On Your Feet only got 1 nomination.
Oh, I totally forgot about that. I'm surprised about that. But
yeah, I mean,
as we were talking about before we started recording, I don't know what I would get rid of in the Best Musical category. Bright Star, Hamilton, School of Rock, Shuffle Along, and Waitress. Would we have had to expand the category to get some of those others in? I don't know what I would have taken out.
I mean, the only nomination it got was for choreography for Sergio Trujillo, and you know, it was a show that was pretty well received. I don't think I heard too much negative about it. So it's interesting to see that it didn't get really much nominations here. I wonder if that is partially because of Out of Sight, Out of Mind, or is it a product of what a great, incredible season it is? Because when you look at this slate of shows, this is as strong as I can remember in a long time, James. And I think that's a testament to the artists that make their living in theater, especially in New York, but also around New York, because you see shows like Spring Awakening, which is essentially a transfer from Los Angeles. And it's very cool to see how rich and diverse a pool of talent that we have both on stage and off stage in the Broadway and theatrical community at large.
I see Shuffle Along this Saturday. So I will be able to report back on that on This Week on Broadway, and maybe we'll talk about it a little next week. But we'll find out if maybe Audra's absences contributed to her lack of a nomination there, or if it's just that this is a very full category. Nobody's denying the talent of Audra McDonald.
Yeah, no, I'm not sure if it had an impact, maybe that she didn't have as much time to perfect her performance, but she was in every performance starting on April 25th, which is when they allowed the nominators and the awards voters for the other ones to be
there.
That's
a good point. It's a good point.
But keeping in mind that she missed a significant amount of time during the preview process. I mean, maybe a week and a half in total. I mean, from here and there, maybe even up to 2 weeks. So that's a hard thing to do when you cut your preview period in half to get a performance, especially one where I haven't seen the show and you're seeing it this weekend, it sounds like she's not exactly the perfect fit for the character. So she's kind of doing some things that she's not used to. It's a more comedic role, which she's very funny, but that's a tough thing to do. And that's not the normal chops you're used to flexing on a Broadway stage. And there's a lot of tap dancing, something that she hasn't done a whole lot on stage lately either.
All right. So let's move forward into the rest of the news of yesterday. So, Matt, I know the truth is out there, right?
This is an X-Files joke, isn't it?
I don't know what you mean. Yeah. I love me some Gillian Anderson.
Yeah, well, that's good, because this is in that vein right there. The Tennessee Williams classic A Streetcar Named Desire opened at the new St. Anne's Warehouse Theater on Sunday night, starring stage and screen stars Gillian Anderson, Ben Foster, and Vanessa Kirby. Directed by Benedict Andrews, the show is a transfer from London's Young Vic Theater, and the show has already been extended through June 4th. We are going to get into some of these reviews, and not surprisingly for a Young Vic production who tends to be very adventurous, they work a lot with Ivo Van Hove, these reviews are you know, kind of mixed, but they all talk about how interesting Andrew's production is. The New York Times' Ben Brantley wrote, "This brave new streetcar takes a lot of presumptuous risks, yet most of them pay off." He continues about the production's two biggest names, Mr. Foster's slyly commanding Stanley, a performance that makes the specter of Marlon Brando, who created the part, temporarily retreat into the dusk, is obviously the younger, stronger, and more confident of the two. But Miss Anderson's Blanche has her own arsenal of weapons, and though they may be outdated, she puts up a vigorous defense. This fading feline beauty is clearly fated to lose, but she's also going down fighting tooth and manicured nail. Joe Domenowicz from the Daily News said that the production is a bit of a mixed bag, praising Anderson's vulnerability but equating her accent to a hee-haw draw. He continues, Anderson's co-stars are more in sync with the modern setting, as Blanche's sister Stella, the English actress Vanessa Kirby, is natural and convincing, although her southern accent often goes up the waterspout. Ben Foster, seen in Orphans on Broadway, nails Stanley's brutish animal sexuality so keenly it could make your head spin. Vulture's Jesse Green says that the show's design is complex and interesting, just like Williams' text is. He said the Kowalski apartment is built on a long, narrow platform that revolves continuously, sometimes slowly enough that it takes a whole scene to encompass one revolution, and sometimes fast enough to induce a certain amount of Blanche-like tipsiness. However beautifully carried out and however apt as a demonstration of the lack of privacy in the Kowalski's life, the design is prima facie alienating. You study its mechanics and the smart solutions to the problems it causes as much as you study the play itself. But this is keeping with the overall aesthetic, which has the meta quality of a contemporary art installation that wants you to notice how boldly it's made and dares you to fathom its contradictions. James, I love this style of things. One of my favorite theaters in Atlanta, Georgia, Sarenby Playhouse, did a production of Streetcar last year, and their entire set was made up of shipping containers where they took a slide off. So this is really cool. I love this idea. Are you scheduled to see this one?
I am not. You know, it came across, and I'm just so busy that I kind of said, "Oh, St. Anne's, I should try to go to see that." But I didn't schedule it, and I guess I'm going to miss it now, which is sad because it sounds like it's really interesting. And I've seen a lot of our colleagues posting pictures from the production, and it looks really interesting. But the question for me is St. Anne's Warehouse, who just moved from 29 J Street to the new location, a few blocks over, underneath the Manhattan Bridge, otherwise known as Dumbo. We wonder, is the new St. Anne's looking to be a transfer house, moving things from St. Anne's Warehouse to Broadway? What do you think?
Well, with a cast like this and a really interesting production value, it could be pretty interesting to see how they do it. Again, they set this, this production is done in the round, so that rotating set, everybody has a little different view throughout the entire thing, and some of the reviews mentioned that there are times when whether it's an actor's head or a toilet might block your view, but because it's rotating, it shouldn't be too long, even on the slower ones. I don't know how something like that would play on Broadway, but with bringing in a high-quality production from London with this much star power, that would be really cool if they could start bringing some of those things to Broadway. I love any production that takes a risk. Whether it works or not, anytime a production decides to go outside of what we normally consider to be how that show is done or how any show is done, I'm all for it, making it to Broadway and hopefully pushing the art form forward in the most commercial of settings there is.
Well, you know, the one Broadway house that comes to mind where you have things on four sides is
Circle and Square,
where Fun Home is. And that's not going anywhere. So
I wouldn't think.
Yeah, although I did see some redesigns for the Lyric Theater with Was it Paramore? Paramore's there right now, but there's another.
I think you're thinking of the new seating arrangements for Natasha Pierre and the Great Comet of 1812.
Absolutely,
where they have some seating on the stage, and it looks like there's like a ramp that comes down. And so they do find ways when they want to be a little bit more immersive. You can find ways to do it. It's not going to be something that is going to affect every seat in the house, obviously, when there's anywhere from 1,000 to 1,500, or if you're going to the Lyric, 1,700 or whatever seats. But you can make it work. I turntables aren't new on Broadway, but doing them in the round is a little tougher in some of those bigger houses. But if they're going to try it, I would love to see it.
Before we run on to the next thing, my favorite theater in the round story is the Westbury Music Fair, which is a house out on Long Island. I saw Stephen Wright, the comic, there a number of years ago, and it's got a turntable, and it's all in the round, and Stephen Wright walked with the turntable for the whole show, so he stayed in the same exact spot, facing the same direction.
That is so perfect for Stephen Wright, if you know his comedy. That's a great story. He's really good on Louis C.K.'s show that he released, Pete and Harold. Harold and Pete.
Yeah,
check that one out. He's really good.
All right. Weekly grosses. Tell us what's going on.
All right. Last week was a pretty good week on Broadway, despite the large number of comped tickets for press and opening nights. What?
Ixnay with the compte.
Oh, everybody. Anybody who's listening to this podcast, James, knows that the press gets free tickets. It's not a surprise. But despite all of that, 30 of the 37 currently running shows saw week-to-week grosses increase last week. Waitress's grosses went up more than $150,000 to settle at $907,936. As usual, The Lion King led the way, less than $50,000 from hitting that $2 million mark, and was one of seven shows to gross more than $1 million last week, along with Aladdin, Hamilton, Paramore again, School of Rock, The Book of Mormon, and Wicked. I would guess now that most of that comping is done, Waitress very well could join that group either next week or the week after. And Beautiful was like $3,000 or $4,000 from hitting $1 million. On Your Feet and American in Paris were also within $60,000. So it looks like as the weather gets better, that some of these shows, whether they're new or have been on Broadway for more than a year, are starting to see those grosses pick up, and I'm sure a lot of producers are happy about that.
Let me jump in for a second. The comping actually doubles right now because Tony Award voters come in and they give them comps, 2-4 comps to come in to see the shows. And so you can actually see probably the grosses stay the same or even go down just a bit for the more popular shows that are campaigning.
Next few weeks.
That are campaigning, yeah.
Okay, well, hopefully not too much.
No,
But that's a good thing. That's a good thing when those Tony voters are coming to town.
It's an advertising cost is basically what it is.
Absolutely. Unfortunately, it continued to be tough going for shows like Disaster, Eclipsed, and The Father, all of which failed to gross $300,000. Granted, plays with smaller casts like Eclipsed, The Father, even Long Day's Journey into Night, and Blackbird, those shows with smaller casts and smaller production values don't cost nearly as much to run as a standard musical, even a small one like Disaster. But James, it'll be interesting to see what things look like over the next few weeks once these Tony nominations come out, and as summer vacations start to happen and tourists start to pick up, it'll be interesting to see what jumps up and what doesn't really get much of a bump from the awards season. You know, it's rare to see a huge jump for a show that's barely treading water like we did with Gentleman's Guide a few years ago, which was down in the, I checked the numbers today, it was down in March and April around $300,000, and then with a Tony nomination and an eventual Tony win for Best Musical, it jumped up to be in that $800,000-$900,000 mark, or in that $800,000-$900,000 club almost weekly, and broke $1 million a few times, but that's the outlier. So, James, let me ask you a question. I'm putting you on the spot here. If I made you pick a show that's currently at the bottom or even in the middle of the pack that could see a huge bump from a Tony nomination, what do you think that might be?
Oh, boy. I think that that's going to be very tough. I think that this has been such a full season that I think that people are going to be, shows are going to be where they are. But in the other aspect of the cost of running a show, you want to look at things like The Father, which is a Manhattan Theater Club, doesn't operate under the same cost basis as a commercial production like Eclipse does. So, you know, the salaries are different scales under a Lord contract versus a Broadway contract, although they compete for the same awards at the end of the season.
That doesn't seem fair, does it, James?
It doesn't, does it?
Oh, well.
All right. So, Dear Evan Hansen, the reviews that we missed, why don't you tell us about those?
Yeah, yesterday we went through the primarily positive reviews for the new Pasek and Paul musical, Dear Evan Hansen, that's currently playing at the Second Stage Theater. And today we want to just wrap up those we missed, including Charles Isherwood of the New York Times, who wrote, Dear Evan Hansen, which opened on Sunday at Second Stage Theater in a superb production directed by Michael Greif, addresses with great heart and humor both the social anxiety we all experience at some point or another, and the new modes of communication that can amplify either a sense of belonging or non-belonging. Entertainment Weekly's Isabella Bendenhahn said, despite the musical's occasional flaws in pacing, its rather rushed second act could use some retooling and lose an expiratory song or two. Platt's performance and the emotions he draws out of the audience lingers long after its final bow, and she gives it a B+. And finally, The Hollywood Reporter's David Rooney said, not since Spring Awakening has a new musical spoken more directly than Dear Evan Hansen to the melancholy adolescent outsider buried inside us all. He continues that the show's affecting emotions are due to smart writing and a fine cast led by Ben Platt, and a breakout performance full of self-effacing humor, raw feeling, and endearingly awkward grace. James, we speculated about this yesterday. I would be shocked if this didn't get an announcement fairly soon that it was coming to Broadway, either in the fall or in next spring. Obviously, these strong reviews make people speculate about that, but these strong reviews also led to an announcement yesterday of a week-long extension, moving the show's final closing date at Second Stage back to May 29th. I know Peter and Michael had a pretty interesting discussion about this show on Sundays this week on Broadway, so if you want to get an in-depth look at this show, take a listen to that. And James, I know you're going to see this. Is it tonight? Are you going to see it?
No, tonight is Fully Committed. I'm going to see Dear Evan Hansen Friday or Saturday or something like
that. Okay. Well, I'll be interested to hear what you have to add to Peter and Michael's discussion from this past weekend.
Yeah, we'll chat about it briefly on This Week on Broadway coming up. All right. So we had an announcement from the Drama Desk. What was that?
I don't know. I honestly don't know, James. This whole thing is just frustrating. And that's going to be a theme for this episode, I think. But, okay, so let's recap. Last week when we discussed the Drama Desk nominations, James, we didn't mention that the nominating committee failed to include the Outstanding Book of a Musical category because basically the Drama Desk failed to include that fact in almost any of its press materials. There was like a half of a sentence about it. Then on Friday, a growing social media movement aided by Doug Wright, the president of the Dramatists Guild of America, had begun amongst the theatrical community to call attention to this otherwise unexplained decision by, as we talked about last week, really other than the Tonys, the most prestigious award in New York theater. Doug Wright from the Dramatists Guild said, "Admittedly, the book writer's specific contributions are often hard to discern. They can sometimes be found in storytelling conceits, in dialogue, or in the crafting of particular scenes. But more often than not, the book writer is the architect of the show as a whole. While his or her work isn't always apparent, it is essential. Musicals cannot exist without the storytellers at their core." That was echoed by nearly everybody in the theatrical community. So shortly after, the Drama Desk issued a statement, a very short statement, that said that the nominating committee would be reconvening to discuss the situation over the weekend. And then yesterday, they sent out another press release that had nary an explanation for their original decision and just said that now John Caird, Michael John Lacusa, and Jesse Nelson would be nominated for Best Book of a Musical for Daddy Long Legs, First Daughter Suite, and Waitress, respectively. Now, full disclosure, Broadway Radio's Peter Felicia is a member of the Drama Desk nominating committee, and it doesn't seem like he's able to comment about this right now. But a few years ago, the Drama Desk did pretty much the exact same thing with Best Orchestrations and later reversed course. And James, we've seen this from Drama Desk. We've seen it from Tony Award for Sound Design. I mean, theater is by far the most collaborative of all art forms, and yet the individuals that should be doing their best to promote all aspects of that collaborative work continually make arbitrary decisions that leave people out. And while that's frustrating on its own right, it's even more disheartening to me when they don't feel that the theatrical community deserves even the vaguest of explanations. If you have a reason, and I assume these decisions aren't made willy-nilly, explain your thoughts, explain your reasons, go in depth as to why you decided to go this route. Don't just send out two-line press releases and treat us like we aren't intelligent enough to understand why you made a decision like this. All right, I'm getting off my soapbox, James.
All right. Once you get down from that, tell us more about the Theater World Awards.
Well, we're going to stick with the Peter Felicia Award news section here. The Theater World Awards announced their winners yesterday. The Theater World Awards are presented annually at the end of the theater season to six actors and six actresses for their significant, reviewable debut performances in a Broadway or off-Broadway production. And as always, Peter will host the private ceremony on May 23rd at Circle in the Square. This year's winners are Danielle Brooks from The Color Purple, Carmen Cusack from Bright Star, Chris Davis from The Royale, Daniel Durant from Spring Awakening, Cynthia Erivo from The Color Purple, John Krasinski from Dry Powder, Sarah Charles Lewis from Tuck Everlasting, Austin P. McKenzie from Spring Awakening, Lupita Nyong'o from Eclipsed, Mark Strong from A View from the Bridge, Anna Villafañe from On Your Feet, and Ben Whishaw from The Crucible. These winners will join the previously announced Bernadette Peters, who will be this year's John Willis Award for Lifetime Achievement in the Theater winner, and She Loves Me's Nicholas Barash, who will be awarded the 2016 Dorothy Loudon Award for Excellence in Theater.
So, while it might be billed as a private ceremony, if you are a listener and you want to go to the ceremony, drop me an email. I know a guy.
I know a guy who knows a guy who might be the MC for the event.
Yeah, exactly. I know a guy who can get you a ticket or two if you'd like to go.
Cool.
So, and in trivia, I designed the Theater World Award logo.
Did you?
Yes,
I did not know that.
Many, many years ago.
Many moons ago. Okay, cool.
So the special Tony Award winners were announced.
Yeah, we had the nominations today, but yesterday the Tony Administration Committee announced three winners of special Tonys. First is the Pride of Millburn, New Jersey. Paper Mill Playhouse will be this year's recipient of the Regional Tony Award. James, you get out to Paper Mill fairly often, don't you?
I do. We love the Paper Mill Playhouse. It's a really great venue, a lot of fun. It's a great evening out.
Yeah, it's one of those shows that not only does great regional work, but is also a trial ground for a lot of out-of-town tryouts that eventually come to Broadway. So
it seems that, you know, we call it Disney Junior.
Why is it? Because that's all the Disney shows go there between Newsies and Hunchback and stuff like
that. Well, more recent stuff.
Yeah.
But Newsies mostly, you know.
Yeah, and Hunchback was there, right?
Yeah, a Hunchback that was there was not a Disney property, was it?
Yeah, that's Disney. Disney.
I don't think so.
I would bet you a dollar.
A dollar? Okay, I'll take you up on that bet.
All right. Listeners, email James and tell him how wrong he is.
Excellent.
All right. We also got some other Tony Awards. It was announced that the National Endowment for the Arts and six-time Tony winner Miles Wilkin from Broadway Across America would also be honored with special Tonys this year.
All right. So it's been a long podcast, so Matt, get us out of here.
All right, we're going to discuss tomorrow the other thing that's annoying me, so be ready for that. I've got another soapbox to get on tomorrow.
Matt's angry.
You wouldn't like me when I'm angry. All right, thanks for listening to Today on Broadway. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter throughout award season at Broadway Radio, and you can find me at BWW Matt, and subscribe to Some Like It Pop on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play.
And I am James Marino from BroadwayRadio.com and BroadwayStars.com. Thanks so much for listening to us later in the day, and we will talk to you early tomorrow morning.